This is Inside Open Wheel with your host, Jeremy Scott.
From the TrackCom Multimedia Studios just outside of Chicago, this is Inside Open Wheel. Hello, everybody. I'm Jeremy Scott. We have a packed show for you today. A lot of news came out after last week's release, so we'll get to that here shortly. Also, an interview with a race winner over the past weekend. So as always, at Inside Open Wheel on Twitter, Inside Open Wheel on Facebook. Leave us a voicemail, 815-714-9260. With anything you'd like us to talk about, maybe you get to hear it on the show. So as we ended last week's show, posted it online, F4FR Americas posted info that they will be on MAV-TV and several other channels around the country. Eric Brennan, our F4FR Americas insider, will be joining us to talk about that. Double race winner in USF 2000 over the weekend, his first two races here in America in Formula Cars. Eduardo Barrichello will be joining us. He got twice the amount of wins his dad did at the same race course. We'll talk about that. Also, where he wants to go after doing USF 2000, what his future lies out to be. And Charlie Ante joins me to decipher everything that has happened in the past couple weeks in open wheel, past week, I should say, in open wheel racing. So, as we said, a busy weekend of racing. We had three races at the Indianapolis Motor Speedway. As we mentioned, it was interesting to say the least. Eduardo Barrichello, Reese Gold, Kiko Porto to round out the podium for race one in USF 2000. Race two saw Eduardo Barrichello, Jack William Miller, and Christian Brooks on the podium. Miller taking that car up to second place. And remember, Eduardo was the teammate to Jack William Miller. We'll talk a little bit about that just a little bit. Also, Reese Gold, Christian Brooks, Kiko Porto round out your top three in the third race at the Indianapolis Motor Speedway. As we take a look at the Indy Pro 2000 results from the Indianapolis Motor Speedway, they also ran, and they're going to run also this weekend at Mid-Ohio Sports Car Course. Yes, they will have a race at the Mid-Ohio Sports Car Course again for IndyCar and Pro 2000 and the USF 2000 cars. As we pull up the results here, again, they also had races on Thursday and Friday. Race one dominated by Stingray Rob. He is your winner in race one. As we try and pull up those results. And we're only getting race three. But we do know that race three was won by Stingray Rob. Hunter McElroy and Artem Petrov round out your top three. Let's see if we can pull this up again. Starting up race two qualifying. Yeah, we only got the practice qualifying. Ah, there we go. So race one was won by Stingray Rob, Hunter McElroy, and Parker Thompson. Your podium there. Race two, Stingray Rob, Devlin DeFrancesco, and Artem Petrov. Your podium there. The scary moment of the race. The race weekend went to Braden Eaves. Charlie Ante and I will break that incident down for you. It was a very nasty crash as cars were going onto the oval. And we'll talk about that a little bit later on. Now, we did mention that the Mid-Ohio Sports Car Course will be running this weekend with a doubleheader for Indy cars. Pro 2000s and USF 2000s. Half of that race will be on NBCSN for IndyCar, the other half on NBC. That's going to be on Sunday, I should say. And I will say this, it's going to be interesting with 100-mile races both days. We just got word that fans will be allowed into the facility, 6,000 at a time. They will be temperature scanned. I do believe they do have some tickets available. You won't be able to buy them at the gate, so you'll have to buy them on midohio.com for more information. If you had tickets to the originally scheduled Honda Indy 200, you can use those as well. Coming up next, our F4FR Americas insider, Eric Brennan, joins us as we talk about the new TV deal for the 2 Formula Series on Inside Open Wheel.
This is Inside Open Wheel with Jeremy Scott.
A huge news week.
this week in Inside Open Wheel. Jeremy Scott here with you. Eric Brennan, our F4FR America's Insider, joins us. And Eric, after we released last week's show, we got the news that the package, which you and I have discussed, and not fully discussed, but we talked a little bit about what may happen, that it's a possibility. It came to fruition, and it looks like that all the races that FanRacing.live has done, looks like that they may be going straight to TV instead of starting the season at Homestead, which will be happening here in a couple weeks.
Yeah, first of all, thanks for having me on again, Jeremy. I love the opportunity to talk some racing with you, especially with the F4 and FR guys. And yeah, what is really a downtime for the series, you know, we're going to be pretty much grounded for, by the time we get to Sebring, we're probably going to be grounded for about 5 weeks since our last race at Barber. Good opportunity to roll out some news, and this was a big one. The television package that they rolled out, which is expected to cover the entire season for the F4 and FR campaign for 2020 and hopefully beyond. But one of the big names there is that it sounds like it'll be on broadcast networks such as VAT TV. Also, for those of you who may be in other quadrants of the country, they've got Revan along with Altitude Sports Network, 11 Sports, as well as a number of regional CW NBC affiliates. All that is available in the press release from the SCCA F4 and Formula Regional website for you to view. But this is a huge boost of confidence. I mean, I think the live streaming element of it, which from what I gather is going to remain available for all to see on race weekends, again, live is the key word at fanracing.live. I think it's huge, though, to know that these drivers and teams, they can go home and kind of rehash and rewatch some of the racing product and get a different perspective on it. But I think most importantly, as far as trying to gravitate, you know, additional eyeballs on some of the future stars in open wheel motorsports, this is the premise that I think needs to be set. We need to have a way to get these drivers and this content, especially in a series as competitive as F4 and FR as well, of course, even though that, you know, it's kind of been the Linus Lundquist show this year. But this is what needs to be done in order to make all that possible. And this is a huge step. And it sounds as though that all the negotiating that was going on behind the scenes is going to pay big dividends, because the opportunities to get in some of these homes and in front of some of these people, it's a long list of options.
80 million households will have some part of this the racing sometime later on this year and into next year. Not to mention, now this gets more sponsors' eyes onto the product, and existing sponsors, they get their product in front of 80 million households. That's nothing to sneeze at.
Yeah, and that's another thing. I was talking to a couple of drivers about this, and a lot of them would come up to Craig or I and say, hey, you know, do you know anything about the TV deal? Like, what you guys are doing is great, but my sponsor would really, you know, be more intrigued in coming back next year if they know that there is a much greater incentive involved. And, I mean, obviously we all know, and we've actually seen it in a number of different facets of motorsports. You know, 2020 was a tough year for a lot of people. It was exceptionally tough for businesses. I know that there are reports that have come out that we've seen some major long-time motorsports supportive sponsors such as Geico kind of retract their support, not only from the stock car world, but also from the supercross world as well. And that's a name that has been synonymous with motorsports. So I can't imagine what some of these, you know, other types of motorsports marketing partners are going through in what is such a very tough time. So yeah, it's going to be an increased sell. I think for the drivers and teams specifically, I mean, for us, it's great because it gives us more content to be able to watch on a number of different occasions, not just having to fall back on the website itself. But for some of these young talents who are really trying to stack pennies to make sure that they have enough funds to last the entire season, even though the, you know, the SCCA FR season, series is designed to be cost effective, having this additional boost and this bit to add to your sponsorship proposal, I think it's going to bode very well for some of these teams as they start to prepare. Even though we're only just past the halfway point in the season at this point, they're going to be able to get a head start of preparing for 2021, especially when it comes towards trying to pitch sponsors on funding for next season.
Now, I know that this announcement is new really to both of us, and we've both gone through it several times, but you know, with the runoffs, they have the broadcast version that they show on, you know, the SCCA website, and then they cut some of the product with to go to CBS Sports Network. And I know when I did NASA as well, we had some special features and vignettes that went onto the NBC broadcast. Is that going to be the case as well, where, yeah, you have the racing on live stream, but you might see some things that you don't see on live stream on network TV.
Yeah, and I will tell you, and this is like full disclosure and just being as transparent as possible. When I heard that this deal was in the mix, I was curious because I did not know if, you know, these companies were just going to take the already shot video footage and dub it over with their talent. I mean, as we know, especially when you're talking about MAV TV,
yep.
I mean, they're pretty much a motorsports specialist, you know, network, you know, located out west. And they often do that. They'll take whatever production quality is shot from, you know, people out in the field. They do it for short track racing, off-road racing, you name it. And then sometimes they'll add their graphics and their input and their talent. And the product is still getting out there, but it's got their spin on it. From what I gather, one of the big focal points in this deal was that the Formula Americas network or the Fan Network branding was going to remain intact. So I believe that includes talent, which, you know, that's a pitch for Craig Minervini and I, because it allows us the chance to get out in front of more people and kind of profess our love for the sport. But it also means that the backdrop of the website, the Formula Americas network partners and sponsors who make all of this happen, not just the television side, but the live streaming effort as well, for what is really, you know, it's an expensive venture. If you compare it to some of the other live streaming options that are out there, you know, I think, you know, Fan goes full send as far as trying to give the best type of, you know, production and broadcast style quality of streaming that you could find. And I think that'll parlay well into a condensed broadcast version. But that should be the goal. It should be that, and I'm excited to see it when I get a final cut version sent to me, hopefully in the next week or so. But it should continue to remain to be under the Formula Americas Network branding. We're just going to have to do a little bit of editing magic in order to condense it down to the 48-minute window they need to see. And we also have planned a mid-season recap show that will roll out as well, kind of sandwiched pretty much at this point in the season, after we get through Barber, before we get down to Sebring. Not exactly sure when that will hit airtime. Should be towards the latter stages of this season. But that'll also serve as a premise to kind of recap some people. And I think that's a great opportunity where if people just happen to catch the series on one of these, you know, these sports networks, they'll get a good idea as to how we got to where we are at this point in the season. And then they could just kind of pick up and follow through as we hit Sebring, Homestead, and Coda.
As I say, that'd make your job a lot easier if all they did is just, you know, took whatever, cut it off the floor, and just sent it to over to, you know, MAV TV and whoever else is going to take care of it. Because, like I said, you know, with my experience, we would film the stuff, film the races, and then some of us would go back to the studio and re-record, you know, whatever they cut. So it made our jobs twice as hard. And I know you have a full-time 9-to-5. I have a full-time 9-to-5. And I'm sure, and Craig also, we know, has a full-time 9-to-5 down in Miami. I wouldn't say 9-to-5. It's more whenever they're needed. But it makes life a little bit harder for those of us who have that real-time job to stop life for a bit, fly down to, you know, whatever production studio and cut up some new voiceovers.
Yeah, and we do have some of those plans in place. I know when we go down to Sebring at the end of the month, I'm actually going to stay in Florida as we transition over to Homestead Miami the following week. And we're going to use that as a catch-up day, maybe to kind of get that midseason wrap-up in the bag. And also, you know, we understand that a lot of the race teams are going to continue to stay down south as well. They're going to eat up that week in the Florida sunshine at that sector of the year. And we're going to try to get as much content as we can and talk to more drivers and get a little bit more of a backbone of the sport, maybe not only for the television side of things, but also to continue to improve the fanracing.live element as well. You know, the idea is to allow, you know, this website and interface to truly give an inside look to everybody, especially on an equal playing field. We want every driver, regardless of where they're from, regardless of what team they drive for, the same opportunity to put themselves out there in front of the masses. And having that week to kind of catch our breath and enjoy ourselves and get a little bit more acclimated with some of these teams when they're not in a heavy race environment where they, you know, have to practice, qualify, and then race 3 to 4 times in a weekend where there's little to no breakdown or, you know, opportunity to get them, you know, in front of the camera and, you know, kind of prep for their interviews and whatnot. That's going to be our chance to do so. And it's something that we're really looking forward to. And I will tell you, for those who have been sticking with the coverage since our inception back in Ohio, and I don't think I'm speaking out of line by saying this, I believe that our production quality as a team and as a whole it has strengthened all the way as we came through Barber. And I had a chance to go back and watch some of the live streaming versions of our production. And I will say that from Mid-Ohio through VIR to Barber, it has just constantly gotten better. And we now have a true core of a team in which Obie Johnson and Ron Sperling are behind 100% along with their respective partners. And I'm really excited for the second half of the year because I really think that we have a chance to knock this out of the park. And this is just the foundation, first year of getting this thing off the ground. And I know that you and I were talking about, you know, some enhancements we may be looking to do down the road towards 2021. But if this is our baseline, if this is our starting point as far as covering this series this season, and we've got the premise in place with the rub site, we've got the right people in the right places, and we've got the TV package under wraps, I think this is huge, not only for the series, but for American Open Wheel Racing in general.
Yeah, and that's the thing. It's always tough to get a series-based broadcast off the ground and get it going. And really, you guys have stepped up above heads and bounds because I've tried to get some series to do that, and just getting it off the ground is the first step, and it's usually the hardest step, but the fact you guys are improving race after race, it's huge. And with as big as Sebring is, I'm really looking forward to seeing, you know, the production quality and seeing how that moves forward. So, I mean, I'm excited for Sebring. I mean, Homestead, you can just put a camera on top of the grandstands and just, you know, okay, yeah, watch it go around, you know, maybe a couple ground cams, but Sebring is going to be a tough nut to crack, I think.
Yeah, the elevation of the grandstands at Homestead is certainly something that spoils us as far as being able to position our camera operators. But Sebring is certainly going to be a whole different animal. And I know that our team had a chance to take this break. I mean, we mentioned this being about, you know, 4 to 5 weeks of downtime at this point in the season. A lot of the drivers were likening to what is traditionally the summer break for Formula One. Mm-hmm. However, this is obviously totally different circumstances. But nevertheless, it's a chance for everybody to regroup. Our production team is doing the same thing, and I think that's why they were finally able to put, you know, the pen to the paper as far as getting some of these deals done. But Sebring is going to be a true test. And, you know, one of the things in which I've happened to notice in some of my other experiences, you know, I think the reason why it's hard to promote American Open Wheel Racing on this level is it does take a lot. I know that our team, you know, went out and they purchased thousands of rolls of fiber optic cable to make sure that they were trying to produce the best video quality possible, not only for the live stream, but also so that way it could be turnkey for a television opportunity before any of these discussions began. And for a lot of these production, you know, teams that are taking care of some of these lower budget racing series, that's hard to do. At a short track, you know, you're not investing in that long because you're almost spoiled for short track racing. You're almost kind of spoiled because of like what you mentioned at Homestead. You know, you have the height advantage at some of these racing venues, and you don't need to run cable, you know, all the way down to the far side of a 2+ mile layout when you're covering a half mile of short track racing. So for American Open Wheel Racing, specifically on the road course side, it's very difficult to put up a very high quality production. I've been keeping tabs, and we were talking about this too last week, the Road to Indy package. And I watched that, and Rob Howden, who's a friend of mine, does a spectacular job on the call of those races. Unfortunately, they got thrown into the spotlight for the worst of reasons a week ago. But nevertheless, that is the typical approach. I mean, I think that used to be the norm, is just to have a bunch of Marshall or still cameras available just to capture all that you can, have somebody on the switcher and follow wherever your commentator is directing you to, and you still get a great product. You still get a good look at how the events unfold. But for what we've been able to do with the support that we have and the partners we have, and that's really, you know, who's responsible for it all. Everybody from Obie Johnson at the top all the way down to a lot of his, you know, supporters and sponsors who said, yeah, we're in this with you. Even before we got a race in the books, they're the ones who make this all possible, because it takes a lot of work, a lot of funding, and knowing that we still have that going forward and knowing that it's paying somewhat of dividends, it certainly warms my heart a little bit, especially as we hit the latter stages of this season.
And as somebody who has been an announcer on the semi-pro side, on the track side, and being used to those static cameras going, you know, from point to point, I've actually, when I did IMSA back in 2011 at Road America, I had to change the TV channel myself so I could watch, you know, the prototype lights and the GT3 challenge, you know, go through the track. So, you know, I'm used to shots like that, and I appreciate when some effort is put into actually showing battles on the track. Real quick, before we let you go,
custom Omologato watch is now available in FR and F4 logos. Have you gotten any of those yet?
No, I was waiting until I got down to Sebring and maybe I could butter up the people who write my checks for Fan and see maybe if they could throw that in as, we'll call it, a Christmas bonus if we do really well, because I saw that article and I am totally on board with it. They look fantastic. And I may not be able to dive in, especially since the wife and I just got ourselves a new home. And I'm pretty sure if I brought that home, I'm not exactly sure that Haley would be too happy with me. But maybe I can convince the suits to give me a chance to have one of those if we can close this year out with a bang.
Well, yeah, congratulations on that new house. As somebody who's done extensive home improvements to his house, don't do it. Just call somebody, please. Save yourself the trouble.
Oh, believe me, we've exhausted the phone book, and we're going to continue to do so.
Eric Brennan, our F4 FR America's insider. We'll talk to you closer to Sebring.
All right. Thanks, Jeremy. Appreciate it as always. Talk to you soon.
More coming up next on Inside Open Wheel. The wait is over. Inside Open Wheel is now on Apple Podcasts. So no matter where you get your favorite podcast from, you can always get a new episode of Inside Open Wheel on that same program. Heck, you can even get a push notification right when we release new episodes. Once again, Inside Open Wheel, we're now on Apple Podcasts.
This is Inside Open Wheel. Now, here's Jeremy Scott.
Well, last weekend was the makeup race for the Road to Indy at the road course of the Indianapolis Motor Speedway. And one driver who has a very famous last name echoed his dad, one of his dad's wins, I should say, but still won twice for his first two wins in the USF 2000 Championship. It's Eduardo Barrichello. Thanks for joining us. We've been wanting to get you on lately, but glad to see we were able to get you after a win.
Yeah, hello. It's a pleasure to be here. Yeah, Indy was an amazing weekend for me. The whole Pabst crew, my team, they worked so hard. I also worked so hard for it, and the results were just amazing. Two out of three wins was unbelievable.
Well, and you've been knocking at the door at getting a win in USF 2000. Last year ran for Miller Vinatieri. This year you move over to front running Pabst Racing, and it was not a matter of if but when, it seemed like, for you to finally reach the top step of the podium.
Yeah, I mean, we had the pace. In Road America, we did okay. We got our first podium. We finished third in race one. And then in Mid-Ohio, we scored pole position, and we couldn't convert it for a win, so we finished second. That actually felt really bad because we were so close, but yet so far. And in Indy, it just felt amazing. Quali, we did really good. Car was good. We qualified third. And on the win, after the battles, we came out on top. And I was really happy about it. And second race, car was mega again. And starting from second, I already got first place in first corner. And it was just managing the car to go over the line, really. And third race, we changed the car a bit, and it wasn't as good as before, and I couldn't finish on the podium, but still, one top five and two wins wasn't too bad.
No, that's a great weekend for most drivers. They'd love to get at least a win, especially in a triple header. We'll talk about this weekend at Mid-Ohio because you head back there where you won that first pole position, but want to talk about Indy as well. Talked about your dad. He did win there once in Formula One. How much advice did your dad give you on the race? I know also you have a lot of help with Tony Kanaan, who is a stalwart there at IMS.
Yeah, for sure. Tony knows all about it. He lives there, and my dad already has he has won there also, but it's a different track now. It's a different layout, but obviously with the experience that he has, it was just an amazing help from them both the whole weekend. And yeah, but the car was really good already out of the bus, really, in the first practice. So we knew we were gonna have a good weekend.
Second year in USF 2000, you said last year you ran for Miller Vinatieri Motorsports, finished 11th in that championship. You're also balancing your time between, you know, Formula cars and go-karts, especially in the off-season.
How much is that helping you trying to get used to some of these newer tracks or some of these tracks you've been to, but getting used to driving?
Yeah, I mean, the cars in USF 2000 are all the same, but the setups are all different. So the team change was really a huge factor in winning races. Last year, the Miller Vinatieri car wasn't a top runner. So me and Jack, we were struggling a bit. But this year, with Pabst Racing, they really have a lot of experience with the car. And I've been having a blast driving for them. And yeah, really the change in between cars to formulas are huge. So you have to basically, I wouldn't say learn again, but you have to really apply different stuff and train different stuff, not only physically but mentally. So yeah, it's a huge change. But now in my third year in Formula Cars, I feel like I already have some good experience, but still a lot to learn.
I say you started your Formula Car experience in the USF4 Championship, running with EC Autosports with Cape Motorsports. But it seems to me that first 2 years you ran with a team that, you know, just started out, even though they had some help with, you know, DC Autosports with Cape. You know, they had some help, but you go into a team that's well-established like Pabst Racing. Augie Pabst III knows his stuff. I've seen what he's done with, you know, Formula Cars. I've seen what he's done with talent. So that had to be refreshing knowing you're going from one team to another that, you know, they know that Tatus inside and out.
Yeah, so my first year in 2018 with DC Autosport was really hard, mm-hmm. because it was my first year in Formula Cars. Right. So I was trying to learn about myself, to know if I really like the car oversteer or understeer, or whatever it would be, if I'm a guy that breaks deep or early. So I was just trying to learn about myself really again. And yeah, my second year in Formula Cars with the Miller Vinatieri, it was a bit easier because of the experience, but the car, the performance of the car wasn't really good, unfortunately. So yeah, but this year we chose Augie Pabst. He's really experienced, and he really helped us to be up front this year. And as you said, he knows about everything. He's a really good guy.
You know what helps also with Pabst Racing is, you know, he's moved up through the road to Indy. So, you know, he's had teams in Pro 2000. He's had teams in Indy Lights. So did you and your family sit back, take a look and see, you know, maybe we could grow with this team if we decide to move up to Pro 2000, you know, next year or 2 years down the road?
Yes, for sure. I mean, it would be a really, really good opportunity to also be in Pabst Racing Indy Pro. It's their rookie year, so they're also figuring out themselves. But yeah, I mean, Augie, as I said, he has a lot of experience and he knows a lot about it. And we have a really, really good relationship. So yeah, I think it was a really good choice of ours.
Eduardo Barrichello joins us, coming off his first win in USF 2000, took two wins out of three here at the Indianapolis Motor Speedway. Next week, just in a couple days, you're going to be heading off to the Mid-Ohio Sports Car Course. That's where you got your first pole. How confident do you feel going in, knowing that you might have a shot at actually not only winning, but possibly improving on your point situation?
Yes, for sure. I mean, after the two wins last weekend, it just kind of... you have no pressure afterwards, just because before that I was always just looking out for a win because I've never had it before. So now I'm even more relaxed. I'm more confident, I would say, and especially where I know the car was really good in Mid-Ohio 1, I'd say. Mm-hmm. So now for Mid-Ohio 2, I'm really confident, and I know that the car is going to be good, but I know that every single team has also developed the car, and so did we, but we have to know how much of a step it was from the other teams.
And then you'll have a little bit of a break. Then you go off to Millville, New Jersey, to the New Jersey Motorsports Park. Have you ever had a chance to take a lap around there, or has it mostly been simulator work?
Yeah, so New Jersey, I had the opportunity to run there in 2018 in the USF4. So I think a couple of drivers were there. So me, Kiko, Christian Rasmussen, we all had the opportunity to race there in 2018. So I think we'll have a bit of an advantage going into there because we already know the track. But it isn't too hard to get to know a track, especially nowadays that we have all the simulators and all that stuff. So I think the advantage that we have is only going to be good for the first three laps, I'd say. So, yeah.
Very minimal advantage. Yeah, first three laps practice, and then everybody takes their computer notes out and shows what they can do. Now, with a lot of Formula One drivers that had, sons in the late 90s, early 2000s, a lot of them now running internationally, whether it be in Formula Renault, Formula 3, Formula 2 overseas, what made you want to stay here in the States and run, like a USF 2000 instead of going off and doing a Formula Renault or Formula 4 or Formula 3 international?
So basically the first situation is obviously the budget. In US, I think for sure, I mean, the USF 2000 is a lot cheaper than the Formula Renault, for example. So it was really good because of that. I don't think we have ever reached the budget to go to Europe. And because of the sponsorship and all of that. And also in Road to Indy, we have a lot of opportunities. The winner gets a scholarship for the next season. So it's really good, and the hard work really pays off for the drivers who are pretty good.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, every year the winner of every series in Road to Indy gets a really, really good advantage compared to everyone else. So yeah, it's really positive.
And I've talked to a lot of drivers who come over from overseas to race, and that's one of their big sticking points. They say, look, if I win this championship, I get to move up regardless because I'm going to have assistance, whereas you don't necessarily get a chance. You may not have a chance to do that in a lot of the junior formulas over in, Europe or Asia.
Yeah, for sure. I feel like sometimes the championship winner from F2 doesn't get anything, really.
Yeah.
And the winner of Indy Lights, he gets to race IndyCar. So it's a huge difference because a lot of people, they literally live their lives to get into F1, and then they win F2 and they don't get anything, and they have to go to work or anything like that. And in the United States, if you win the Indy Lights championship, you get the opportunity to run in an Indy car. So it's a huge difference there. It's a life changing situation.
Well, look at how many drivers came from F3 and F2 in the middle of the late 2000s because they couldn't break into the next level, whether it was F2 or F1, and had some sort of decent success here in IndyCar, even some of the F1 drivers. So, we're lucky to have what we have in terms of a ladder system that allows you to move up instead of, well, you got to have this amount of money to move up, and maybe you'll get, like a AlphaTauri seat for, 5 or 6 years until somebody retires.
Yes, for sure. But, I mean, the example that you gave, it's really good now just because an AlphaTauri just won.
I understand. I almost said Minardi, so that's dating myself right there.
Yeah, but I mean, it's really hard to see drivers from F2 going up F1. They always have to have a connection with the junior teams, and it's really hard to get that nowadays. It takes a lot of money, really, to get into a junior team. But once you do, it's also really hard to go up the F1. Last year, we saw that only one new driver went to F1, and he was already reserve driver from Williams, which was Latifi.
Right.
So, yeah, the opportunities are really, really small.
All right, let's talk about your future. Where do you want to go? Do you want to eventually move up to IndyCar, or what do you have your sights set on here in the next 5 to 10 years?
Yeah, me and my family, we're really open about those thoughts, just because my dream is to have an opportunity to live out of it, and I don't really mind if I'm racing Formula One, IndyCar, or whatever, because those are the top stuff. But really, just being lucky enough to get my life out of racing, that's really my dream.
Oh, that's understandable. I think that's kind of commendable because you see a lot of guys that they have their sights set on a racing career and it doesn't pan out, well, what do they do now? You know, I've heard countless stories of people, you know, ended up being having to scrape by getting, driver coaching gigs. But, the fact that you're wanting to do something outside of racing in case this doesn't pan out is great. One final thing, and I know we haven't, we've talked a lot about you, but how is your dad as a racing dad, being somebody who's had success at the top echelon of motorsports? What's it like for you as a driver?
Well, it's such an opportunity to have my dad as my dad, just because he knows so much and he helps me so much. Everything I know about racing is literally about him. And if one day I'm 50% as good as him, I think that's already really good. And yeah, so it's such an opportunity to have him by my side. He helps me so much. Not only with tips, but just everything, really. Everything, I owe him a lot.
Well, you've done what many people can't say they've done. You've won your first open wheel race at the world's famous race course, Indianapolis Motor Speedway. You're going into this weekend with at least some great knowledge of being up front. Eduardo, good luck this season. How can fans follow your success so far this year?
Sorry?
How can fans follow you on social media?
So my Instagram is at Dudu Barrichello, and you can follow me there. I usually post pictures about all my weekends. Oh, yeah, that's really it.
Sounds good. Eduardo Barrichello, thanks for joining us. Good luck this weekend at Mid-Ohio.
Thank you. Thank you very much.
Coming up next, Charlie Ante and I talk about the news this week in racing on Inside Open Wheel.
This is Inside Open Wheel. Now, here's Jeremy Scott.
I will say, in this time that we are in here in 2020, this has been by far one of the busiest news weeks I can remember. Charlie Ante joins me to break it all down. Let's start off with the big one. It was announced last week that Mid-Ohio Sports Car Course would be hosting the Honda Indy 200 doubleheader. Each race would be 100 miles. I'm calling it now. Scott Dixon, he's going to sweep the weekend, extend that points lead. Sorry. That's his territory.
That's where the smart money is.
Yeah. Yeah. It's... I'm going to say after this weekend, they're just going to start etching the trophy on, because all he has to do is just do really well in one of the races at IMS in October. But I wouldn't even be surprised to see, Erickson and Rosenquist split the weekend. Look at how good Felix Rosenquist was last year. One more lap and he would have won there. But it's going to be interesting to see what happens with the doubleheader at the Mid-Ohio Sports Car Course. I can't remember a race that ever had a doubleheader there at Mid-Ohio in mm-hmm. pro formula, pro open wheel, whether it be kart or IRL, IndyCar. So it's going to be interesting. I'm glad that they knocked it down to 100 miles each race, because I think twin 200-mile races at Mid-Ohio is just pure evil.
Yeah, I mean, I remember it wasn't too long ago where they were playing with the qualifying format, mm-hmm. and I think I remember Tony Kanaan saying that the qualifying was just as physical as the race. It's going to be similar to that again.
I would like to see, even for Formula One, I'd like to see the return of one car, one lap qualifying. Wrong what you brung.
I remember they experimented with that, and I think that they kind of ruined it because they required you to use the same fuel level that you would for the race. Like, you had to start with your qualifying fuel.
That's right. Yes.
Remember that?
Yes. Yeah. So you'd burn.
There was always a question of, did they get a good qualifying position by using a light fuel load? Mm-hmm. And you wouldn't know until the race.
Yep. Yeah. No. Well, here's what you do. One lap, one run, top it up, and you get out your best qualifying tires. Do like what they used to do on the ovals.
Yeah, I think that would be interesting. But I have to admit, I do like the knockout style qualifying.
Yeah.
It's entertaining enough for me.
It is, but I guess I'm looking more Formula One, because at least with IndyCar, you actually have a question of, okay, who's going to win the pole, instead of which Mercedes is going to be, leading into turn one.
Yeah, but I mean, that's kind of a problem with the that's not the qualifying format problem.
No,
not sure exactly where the problem is, but it's not with the qualifying format.
But by the way, off topic, I like how now Formula One, after the wonderful shock win by Pierre Gasly, how Formula One's like, okay, we're gonna talk about reverse grids again. No, that's not how that happened. Not how that happened.
Yeah, I think that you know, I was not to get I started watching it like right before the red flag, like a couple laps before it. So I'm not sure how. I mean, I know that Hamilton had a penalty.
Yep.
The Ferraris are just kind of having a terrible season.
Yep.
I'm not sure what happened to the Red Bulls. But it seems like, I mean, the top three dominant teams just had a bunch of problems. And so all the people that are usually out there just fighting for scraps are now suddenly fighting for the win.
Yeah, that was an interesting race. I will say it was actually pleasant after the red flag. I flipped between that and the tours, so that was that was something. All right, some news that broke today, and Charlie, you've seen the rendering, so we'll talk about that. Auto Club, it was announced over on The Athletic that Auto Club Speedway has started plans to go from a 2 mile course onto a half mile circuit. And what's interesting about that is, well, not only the fact that the second they become a half mile circuit, the IndyCar will no longer be able to run there. The fact that they're still going to try and utilize the part of the front stretch, which is banked at 11 degrees as the front stretch. So it's going to be curved front stretch with tight Martinsville hairpin turns that are banked almost like Martinsville. Although I wouldn't mind seeing an IndyCar doing a lap or two around there, but nonetheless, it's an interesting experiment, and it leads me to believe what other courses that IndyCar has raced at will NASCAR change. I don't think that they'll do too many half-mile circuits, because then we'll have three on the NASCAR circuit. But makes you wonder if they're going to go to three-quarter mile courses, you know, especially with tracks that didn't run this year. And I've got some local flair here, but I want to get your opinion on this.
Well, when you sent me the picture, I hadn't heard about this until you told me about it. And
right,
when you sent me the picture, I was like, oh, that's kind of cool. But I didn't understand exactly what you were saying.
Okay.
So like, are they changing Auto Club Speedway or are they building a new one?
They're changing
Auto Club. I was like, if they're building a new one, that's cool. I like it. If they're destroying Auto Club Speedway to build that, I'm not so sure.
Yeah, I'm very torn about it. First of all, on the open wheel side, whatever, that's fine. We've got Long Beach. We've already got one track in that circuit. Two tracks in that circuit's too much.
Yeah, and Auto Club, it doesn't really draw much of a crowd anymore.
No, I mean, the last time they drew that big of a crowd was when Jill DeFerrin broke the closed course record at 241.
Mm-hmm. So. Yeah, and open wheel racing was in a very different state back then.
Oh, yeah. So, of course, you know, a lot of the kart races and a lot of the IRL races then were on ABC, so, you know, they were in front of people. Nowadays, you just get them on, you know, you're lucky if you get a race or two outside of IMS on NBC, which, oh, by the way, the second IndyCar race at Mid-Ohio on Sunday will be on NBC, and I believe it's a 1 o'clock Eastern start. I'll double-check that.
Mm-hmm.
So, but anyway, I know that NASCAR is trying to sell off some assets in regards to their land. I would not be surprised if we saw Chicagoland go to a three-quarter mile or a 1 mile, because I know they're trying. I know that they went to the Joliet City Council and tried to rezone some of that land, because for those who don't know, there's been a big boom of intermodals in the Joliet area, and Chicagoland is on the eastern fringe of that. Off turns 3 and 4 is a big IKEA distribution center. Amazon has a distribution center in that same vicinity too. So it could be NASCAR trying to just, you know, get some capital back, especially with the COVID-19 really affecting their racing schedule. But I wouldn't be surprised if we saw Chicagoland. I can't see Kansas, because, you know, you've got the Hollywood Casino off turn two there.
I think I heard rumors about Kansas a little while ago.
I think I did too. Yeah.
So, but I think it's interesting how there's talk of not just selling them, but changing them.
Yeah. Well, you got to understand, too, look at the cookie cutter revolution of the late 90s, early 2000s. You and I have talked about this ad nauseum off the air, and they should have honestly, if you ask me, NASCAR should have bought Chicago Motor Speedway in Cicero and just redid that, because that was a tight 1 mile course. It was just great for open wheel racing, and you know they had the trucks there, so it's not like they had an excuse. Well, we didn't know it was there.
Yeah, well, I think at the time, I mean, NASCAR was huge. IndyCar was on the brink of death.
Yeah.
So I don't think that they were thinking, you know, 15, 20 years in the future.
No.
They were just trying to expand NASCAR as quickly as they could. And I think the mile and a half, I mean, I guess they're popular to amongst NASCAR fans, or maybe not.
Not anymore.
I don't really know.
Not anymore.
To be honest, I actually, and, you know, I've driven them in iRacing, and they're a lot of fun to drive on and race on in iRacing. So I kind of understand them a little bit better now than I did back then. But I mean, what you were saying when we were starting this discussion was, what do I think that they should, like, what do I think they should change next? I think they should change some of these 1.5 mile ovals, because there are too many of them. It would be nice to see some of them change and just to have more variety.
To be honest with you, I would like to see them reflatten Homestead. I mean, as much as it's great that they banked it, I would love to see them make it flat again. That way we can have Indy cars back there, because that would be phenomenal to see those cars back on a flat Miami.
Although, didn't they change it because it just made awful racing?
It made awful racing for the stock cars. Didn't make it any better once they made the progressive banking.
Really?
Yeah, I don't think it did.
Huh.
But then again, you know my thoughts on watching stock car racing these days. But yeah, I mean, there's a lot of tracks they can change. You know, heck, they can even reprofile. Oh, I don't think they own. No, they do not own Kentucky. That's one of the tracks they don't own. Hmm. Well, a lot of the mile and a half, so, are also under, you know, Humpy Wheeler's control too. So you know, there's not much they can do to that, but you know, they can fix Chicagoland at least.
I think they need to bring back Ontario Speedway. Just buy back the land and bring up the old blueprints and modernize it a little bit so it's like all safe, modern safety standards, and just bring that back.
Bulldoze the shopping center that's sitting there on the old Ontario Motor Speedway. You know, I mean,
shopping centers are dying off to Amazon anyway. It might as well make another racetrack.
Well, and not,
might as well make a good racetrack.
And not to mention too, I think part of Turn 3, I think it is still there. It's crumbled up. So just redo it. You know what?
Is it really?
I think I saw five. I gotta look it up. We'll look it up.
I'm looking at it on Google Maps right now. I don't know exactly where it is, so I don't think I'm going to stumble upon it, but I don't know. I know it's close. Is it where the airport is now or near it?
It's near it. Give me 1 second, because there's a story of Ontario Motor Speedway. I may have seen that one. Let me see if I can pull it up on Google Maps, because there's an Ontario Motor Speedway Park. Huh. Okay, so here's what you would have to destroy in order to get... You have to destroy some apartment homes, a La Quinta, which is no big loss there. There's a regional park, a DeVry, a couple of profit colleges. Okay, that's fine. I know people are listening going, God, Jeremy, I never knew you were this awful. You haven't listened to... you never listened to The Inside Groove. This is tame compared to that.
There's a K1 speed. I don't know if that's on the speedway, but that'd be kind of ironic.
Oh yeah, you know what, just get rid of that. I mean, it's just electric. I mean, come on. You'd have to work around the whatever the heck, the irrigation system that they have that goes through there. You may lose,
you build over that.
Oh yeah, you may lose part of Turner Avenue. A bank.
But you know, this I mean, the thing with Ontario Motor Speedway was that it was basically like a replica of Indy, right?
Yeah. Yep.
So that kind of brings to mind this alternative universe where IndyCar was in the 90s and 2000s what NASCAR was.
Yeah.
And so instead of building the cookie cutter 1.5 mile ovals, in this alternative universe, they're building a whole bunch of Indy Motor Speedway cookie cutters.
Well, remember, too, Homestead was originally designed as a shorter version of IMS.
Mm-hmm.
So,
yeah.
Oh, you know what? If you extend it far enough, you can destroy the QVC Ontario Distribution Center warehouse. But then again, never mind. I don't want to go there. it's also right by an Infiniti of Ontario, irony, and an Audi of Ontario.
What monster did I unleash here?
Oh, you unleashed a horrible monster. You know what? Let's take a break, and we'll put the monster to bed. We've got a couple of other things to talk about, including IndyCar in Nashville as early as next year. Talk more about that here on Inside Open Wheel. The wait is over. Inside Open Wheel is now on Apple Podcasts. So no matter where you get your favorite podcast from, you can always get a new episode of Inside Open Wheel on that same program. Heck, you can even get a push notification right when we release new episodes. Once again, Inside Open Wheel, we're now on Apple Podcasts.
This is Inside Open Wheel. Now, here's Jeremy Scott.
All right, I promise I've gotten the destruction out of my head. Let's talk about places, farm places we can get. No, I'm kidding. Charlie Ante joins me. And speaking of racetracks, the past week, Roger Penske and company went down to Nashville, Tennessee to talk about possibly running the streets of Nashville as early as next year. And with the two-time defending IndyCar champion hailing from Nashville, it's a smart move. I don't see any negatives with it.
Yeah, I heard about that, but I didn't draw that connection until you just mentioned it.
Yeah, I mean, but you know.
Yeah.
Go ahead. Sorry.
All right, go ahead.
No, go ahead. I'm in the middle of typing.
Well, I was just going to say, I absolutely love street circuits.
Yeah.
So anytime there's talk of a new street circuit coming on, I get excited.
Yeah, it's supposed to, this course is supposed to be going around Nissan Stadium, and the rumors that I'm hearing, they want it to incorporate the Bridgestone building, you know, some sort of sightline to the Bridgestone building. Nate Ryan of NBC Sports posted an article on August 28th, and does confirm that the Music City Grand Prix is what they're going to call it. They plan to bring an annual NTT IndyCar Series Urban Street Race to Nashville. It's progressed this week by bringing one step closer. Personally, I hope this doesn't go the way of the Oklahoma City Grand Prix. I remember how they had so much promise, and then that fell off the wayside. And yeah, like you, I love street courses. I've been to a couple myself. Almost went down to St. Pete this year for practice. I want to see it succeed. I really do.
Yeah, a piece of free advice. Whoever was working on the Boston Grand Prix, don't put them on this project.
And let's try not to go over railroad courses. San Jose and Baltimore, both thank you for that one.
Yeah, IndyCar has a bad habit of doing that.
Yeah, well, you know what? I'm sure plenty of dentists really appreciate that too, but let me see if there's...
And some orthopedic surgeons.
Oh my God, yeah. That's one thing I need to talk to somebody about. Hey, tell me about San Jose.
There's a, I'm looking at the Nissan Stadium right now on Google Earth.
Right.
Apparently, across the street from that, there's a juvenile court.
Oh God.
That's such a strange thing to have right next to a NFL stadium.
Well, I'm not gonna go down that road. Okay, let's see here. I'm gonna look at it myself. Oh, I do see that. Holy cow. That is very strange. I mean, you know, the roads have a lot of promise. There's a quality and not too far from there, so at least you can walk to walk from the hotel to the pits. That's always good. Looks like they've got some great restaurants on the other side of the Cumberland River, but yeah, it looks like there's a lot of places with promise that could pose for a great layout. The good news is I am hearing that Tony Kottman is the man in charge of layout, so I got to get a hold of him and see what he has to say about this. For some reason I was just thinking of the old Evanston Grand Prix that they tried to get back a decade ago, a suburb just north of Chicago, and how Chris Neifel was actually designing that, and I'm like, I hope Neifel doesn't have anything to do with this, but nothing against CK, a very nice guy, former IndyCar driver himself. There's also an indoor karting facility not too far from Nissan Stadium as well.
Interesting.
Yeah, so, I mean, you know, when you get your kicks on the racetrack, just go down to the karting center. Topgolf, so there's plenty of things to do around there that look like some entertainment. You've got a truck stop net right next to there as well. Minor league baseball park. So, the Musicians Hall of Fame and Museum's there, too. Country Music Hall of Fame's not too far from there, either. So, yeah, I mean, it's a great place to have a race, to be honest with you, because you've got a lot of entertainment around there. And it looks like that it could be a decent layout. I'm excited to see what the initial layout's going to be and how they're going to work around the stadium and within the parking lot as well.
Yeah, it'll be interesting. Oh, you said that they might have it by next year?
Next year is the earliest I've heard that they may put it on schedule. So, I mean, it's not like a natural terrain road course where they've got to build everything up and it's going to take, you know, 2 years to get up.
Yeah, they just need to go through all the red tape for the city.
Yeah, and what was it, 3-4 years ago they were trying to get the Nashville Grand Prix and they had some red tape. So hopefully now that Roger Penske's involved, nothing against the previous administrations in IndyCar, but now that Roger Penske's involved, I think things might be, the wheel might be greased a little faster this time.
Mm-hmm.
So that'll be interesting to see what happens. I'm hoping that next year we'll be able to get back up to Toronto. That's one of my favorite street courses. I love Toronto. Oh, by the way.
No, you go ahead.
We're talking about Toronto. By the way, where were we? What was it? 3 years ago this week.
Were we at Toronto?
Yeah, we were in Toronto. Yeah, we were at the Blue Jays game, too.
Oh, yeah, that's right.
Yeah, I saw that in my memories on Facebook, and I'm like, oh, yeah, that's right.
Yeah, that was fun.
That was fun. All right, so it's also fun going backwards down the back straightaway at Toronto. That was pretty cool. So, all right, let's talk about something serious that happened over the weekend. Braden Ease with a very – I'm gonna come out and say it was a vicious crash.
Yeah, it was pretty – gnarly.
I'm glad that he was able to figuratively walk away. One thing that was interesting, I don't know if you saw, did you watch that full race at all or beforehand?
No.
Okay.
I saw the crash, but I didn't see the whole race.
So, coming off the back straightaway, this is the final lap. They're going through the S's there behind the museum, and our friend Rob Howden said that Eves reported in that there was some sort of vibration with the car. And he was racing for a position, and when he, for those who haven't seen it, that transition from the road course to the oval before you go into that final infield section inside turn one, that's where Braden Ease lost. And it looks like that vibration was probably the beginning of the wheel breaking off because it broke off right as he spun. And then the car got airborne, landed on its roll hoop from what it looks like, and made heavy contact with the outside wall. Safety crews got on the scene and they transported him to Methodist Hospital where he had an overnight stay. He had a couple of broken vertebrae, I should say. And he was released the next day because he was spotted at Newcastle Motorsports Park supporting some carters, which is, it's great for him that he was released. But unfortunately, I think the defending Indy Pro 2000 champion is done for the season. Let's talk about that crash because... with a car that new, and you and I both know a decent amount of the regulations, I'm a little surprised that with the tethers that are required in open wheel racing these days, that wheel flew off like it did.
Yeah, that's a very good question. I think, you know, you can make the tethers as strong as you like. But also, you know, the another weak point is what it's mounted to, right? So I think that's sort of the limiting factor. So even if the tether stays together, you can rip it off the mounting point. So they're not 100% reliable. And it didn't really, like, we've seen way worse, way more violent crashes where the wheel tether stayed on.
Oh, yeah.
So it's very strange. And it was a very strange accident, too, because, I mean, the first time I saw it, like, it looked like he had contact with another car.
Right.
But that contact was on the opposite side of the wheel that fell off. So obviously it wasn't the contact that caused it to fall off, at least not directly. And then the car spins and it kind of like catches the wheel and flips over the wheel.
Right.
It fell off.
Now, could it, I know you haven't raced it at Indy in real life. Have you raced the road course?
Just in iRacing.
That's what I meant. Yeah, in iRacing.
Yeah.
Does it have the, I know that I've played it in real racing and there's a little bit of a transition there coming from the road course onto the oval. Is mm-hmm. that the case in iRacing as well?
Probably. I mean, I don't remember exactly, but I'm sure. I mean, they laser scan the circuits.
Right.
So,
I'm trying to think back to
the crash. But I don't think that he lost the wheel in the transition. I think he was still firmly on the road course part.
Yes, that's what I'm thinking. I'm thinking he was on the what is considered the apron there of pit out.
Mm-hmm.
I'm thinking back to the crash. I'm going to see if I can find it on YouTube. Give me a second, but go ahead and talk more about this.
It's interesting that you said that that Rob Houghton's heard him on the radio saying that there's a vibration, because it sounds like the wheel just came loose. I mean, you know, but sometimes that stuff happens.
And oh, you know what? Okay, so here's what happened. So, I'll send you the link. What looks like what happens is. He runs onto the rumble strips, and as he gets mm-hmm. off those rumble strips there at the apex, that's where he starts to lose it.
Mm-hmm.
That makes sense. Yeah, I'll send it to you right now, actually.
Okay.
And you can kind of judge. And I notice it around the third second, and it's the. If you're listening, it's on YouTube. It's the top result in Braden Eve's crash when you search for that.
Oh, yeah. Probably the rumble strip that that finally shook it loose.
Yep. And another question that was asked, and I've seen this, these lower series that don't have the hot pit stops like IndyCar does, they have the wire. It's almost like a wire. It's a wire clip that they drill holes in. They drill holes into where they have the screw to put the nut on. I know that's not the technical term. I apologize for those of you who think I know everything in open wheel racing. I don't. And they put the wire in there, and that usually holds the nut in place. Could it have been that he was hitting the rumble strips enough during the race that it just shook it loose?
That's an interesting point that you bring up about those. I forgot about them.
Because, I mean, do you guys have that in 1600s?
We do, yeah.
Okay.
I don't know. I mean, those things are on there pretty good. You gotta yank them pretty hard to get them off.
So it could have been a hub that may have gone. It'd be interesting.
Yeah, could have been.
Let's see here. And you can't see that side.
You know what could have been? Last year, was it last year? I think it was last year or the year before. I was racing in Montreal.
Okay.
And I was lining up to the grid. And one of the mechanics came over and he pointed out that the kingpin nut on my left rear was coming out of the lower A-arm.
Okay.
And so, you know, this, I'm not a professional mechanic, so I didn't realize that you have to tighten those or check them regularly. It's a good thing he caught that, because if he didn't, then there's a very good chance that my wheel would have fallen off in Montreal.
Right.
That's, you know, something like that could have happened. Maybe maybe it wasn't from the hub. Maybe it was the upright coming out of the lower A arm or the upper A arm or wherever. I'm not sure exactly how these are designed, but it's possible that the kingpin bolt could have come loose.
But wouldn't it also have been attached to the wheel still?
Yes.
Okay. Cause I'm looking,
well, the upright would still be attached to the wheel. Yeah.
Because I've slowed it down to quarter speed. I've been watching it the past couple of minutes while we've been talking about this. The wheel has a characteristic that's not consistent with something still stuck to it.
Yeah, and it looks like I'm looking at the picture of him like just sitting upside down on the track, and you can see what looks like the upright or the brake rotor still there.
Yeah.
So it does look like, well, wait a second. I'm not sure what side that's on.
So it looks like it is the left rear.
It's hard because the moment that the wheel comes off is like right between the two camera angles.
Right. But the moment...
So is it the left rear or the right rear that comes loose?
It's the left rear that comes loose because looking at it upside down and backwards, that's on the right. But if you turn everything around... Well, hold on a second. Let me think about this first.
No, it is. It's the left rear. You're right.
Yeah, your left rear. Okay. It's strange, you know. But let's just say this. Thankfully, Braden Eves is going to be okay in some capacity. Looks like he will be able to race another day. But you know, best wishes to Braden Eves. We want to see you back in a race car. It's just an unfortunate situation. That's what it was. And yeah, it's just. What's the right rear? Hold on a second. I gotta go back and take a look at this.
I'm pretty sure it's the left rear.
Hold on. Okay.
Because the right rear.
Yes. You know
the
what?
The tether works.
If you slow it down to quarter speed, you see as he's spinning, the left rear collapses.
Mm-hmm.
You start to see it collapse just before they cut to the camera that's at the exit of Oval 1.
Mm-hmm.
And then, you know, he skids on that for a little bit, and then that finally snaps, and that's when he catches air.
And what we were saying earlier about the wheel tether is if the wheel comes off the hub, then that's not what the tether is attached to. So
Correct. There's
nothing the tether is going to do to fix that. Because it looks like the tether worked on the right rear when he's sliding across the ground, that's when that snaps.
Correct.
And so that worked.
Yeah. Yep. So that, okay. So it's going to be interesting to see if IndyCar releases a report on that. We're going to try and follow up on that in the next couple of weeks. And we'll definitely keep up and find out what exactly happened. And
another question that brings up is should the Road to Indy series incorporate the Halo or the Aero screen? I think I'm pretty sure that these cars are not capable
correct
of having those. You need a lot of like because if the car is not designed for it, you need a bracing near and around the attachment points. So because like for example, if you just stuck it onto the car like it is, then you can roll over. You land on the roll hoop or on the halo, and the halo just punches through the top of the monocoque.
Right.
So you need to reinforce that and all of that stuff. So you can't just bolt it on, and these cars are not prepared to do that, from what I understand.
Yeah, I think it'd be smart for them to have the next generation of these cars have a windscreen. And
yeah, I think they will.
Yeah.
But they just introduced these cars 2 years ago.
Yep.
Or 3 years ago.
Yep.
So we're at the very beginning of the cycle for these cars.
All right. So before we let you go as well, 6,000 fans per day will be allowed at the Mid-Ohio Sports Car Course. MidOhio.com is where you get tickets. If you have tickets, they will still honor those tickets. So definitely, but check ahead. By contacting Mid-Ohio Sports Car Course to see they are going to require masks. You will have your temperature checked each day. On your forehead, though, that's a good thing. You don't have it anywhere else.
Yeah, don't get me started on the temperature checks.
Next week, we will wrap up Mid-Ohio, and we'll have some interviews as well. We're still working on a couple of those. So we will see you next week. Take care, everybody. Be safe. Bundle up if you're here in the north because it is cold. Take care, everybody.